Okay, this is a pre-hearing conference in MUP 16-019 and -020 that have been consolidated for hearing. My name is Sue Tanner. I'm the hearing examiner, and why don't we find out who's here, starting to my right.
Good afternoon, Madam Examiner. My name is Alex Seidels. I'm a Rule 9 intern at the Washington Forest Law Center, representing the petitioner, Lisa Perriott.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Peter Goldman, director of the Washington Forest Law Center, and I am Alex's supervising attorney.
Hello, I'm Mary Fleck, co-chair of Seattle Green Spaces Coalition.
Maybe they would share a microphone phone with
you. Oh, I'm sorry.
We don't have enough for everybody. All right. All right.
And Lisa Perriott.
David Graves of the City of Seattle.
Andy McKim, City of Seattle.
Bill Mills, City of Seattle.
Crystal Torres, City of Seattle.
Whole department's there.
Cliff Lowe and my wife, Hanji Lowe, we're the owners of the land.
Sam Jacobs for the applicant.
Brandon Grimmon of Hessel Fetterman, also for the applicant.
Okay. First of all, I think we need to talk about what issues I do have jurisdiction over and what issues I don't have jurisdiction over. The appeals both list special exception as one of the elements of the decision that is being appealed. And so I'm going to ask each of the appellants or their counsel to tell me where in those appeals is anything about a special exception. There's a reference to it in the element of the appeal being element of the decision being appealed. There's nothing that I have found in either appeal that talks about anything with respect to an issue concerning a special exception. Is that, am I correct on that? I'll ask first with respect to the, is it Perio?
Lisa Perriott.
Perriott, okay.
Madam Examiner, we believe that the entire project is subject to Type 2 special exception review.
I know that. I'm okay. Just wondering, is there anything in here with respect to just special exception?
Oh, pertaining to like the window size or the lot depth?
Right.
No,
the,
nothing like
the
that.
The criteria, okay.
That's correct.
Same thing with respect to the other appeal, Ms. Luck?
It is our position that the entire project is a special exception. It is a Type 2 decision.
Right. Is there anything in here with respect to special exception criteria?
Yes, it is all with respect to special exception criteria, Your Honor.
Okay, I have found nothing in here that lists anything about or talks about the criteria that are in the code with respect to special exception. So that's what I'm asking. Let's see. Has anyone filed a code interpretation?
Yes, Petitioner Perriott has filed a code interpretation.
Okay. And you do appeal the interpretation in your appeal. I see that.
Initially, we were planning to do a code interpretation and an appeal.
Right.
But then we thought if this was a Type 2, we didn't have to do a code interpretation. Talking over with the department, we became concerned that we would be dismissed for failure to exhaust if we didn't. So we put one in like almost at literally the last minute. So we haven't seen that code interpretation. We don't know,
what
its contents will be or anything. So we're not appealing that because we don't know what.
Well, you actually do in here. You do say that you're going to appeal it if it's
if it's adverse.
And that's fine.
Okay.
Okay. And
Your Honor, we have not filed a code interpretation request because it is not necessary for us to appeal the MUP or the historical lot exception. And you had asked where it was mentioned, and I'm just going to refer to the analysis and decision, page 1.
Okay. Ms. Fleck, the Mr. Duffus's decision that you reference in your brief, did you look at the procedural aspects of that, how it got to the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and so you know there was an opinion letter issued, and then a code interpretation was requested and issued. Then the hearing examiner affirmed it, and so on.
Yes, okay. And that was done by the property owner, Your Honor.
Right.
We are not the property owner.
I understand. Okay, Mr. McKim, tell me about timelines with respect to the interpretation request.
Well, for the interpretation, David is going to prepare the interpretation. We're going to propose that we get it out in approximately a month, sometime early in December.
Okay. We have a January 12th hearing date, right?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. Okay, anybody from the applicant want to start?
Yeah, so with respect to...
Did you have something else?
Well, I'm not representing this individual, but I think she raises a good question. We just want to make sure that we... we're trying to get this... Are you suggesting that we are here to appeal the interpretation and we're going to stay this way, or are we...
I am telling you that I saw in here an appeal of an interpretation.
Okay, yeah. That was a placeholder appeal.
Right, and
while we're here on the... We believe this is a type 2, and that we're here for the type 2, and then in the event that the you rule that it is not a type 2, then we would revert to an appeal of the interpretation.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. I guess my question was, do you imagine consolidating those, or do you imagine doing them sequentially?
Since I don't see anything in either appeal concerning the special exception criteria that are in the code, I'm going to dismiss that, the special exception appeal. The code interpretation you have requested and appealed will certainly be done by early December. That's appealed. It can be appealed, and so therefore that's what we're here for.
Okay.
No, it is not a type 2 that we are here for at this point. The reason for that is the exact same situation that we had in the Duffus case that Ms. Fleck was citing. The examiner has jurisdiction to determine whether or not there is a type 1 or a type 2 decision in front of her or him, because we have to in order to know whether we can accept the appeal. There, what was in front of me with respect to a special exception appeal was a type 2 appeal. What was in front of me with respect to the issue of the historic lot exception is a type 1 decision, and I don't have jurisdiction over that. And the reason that I don't is pretty clearly stated in, let's see, 2388020, it talks about the application of development standards to a lot requires an interpretation. It's also stated in 2376, is it 004? Yes.
Excuse me, Your Honor. I had not anticipated that you would be making a determination of legal issues today.
I got your brief. I've already read it. I am telling you that I have the jurisdiction to make this determination, and I'm going to, and that's what I've said. So we're not here for a Type 2 decision. We are here for a code interpretation appeal.
If you are going to make a decision today about jurisdiction, I'd like the opportunity to brief that fully. There is a case that says a code interpretation is not required, and that is the Cates case. That is an appellate court case that says an interpretation is not required by a non-property owner.
And it says that in Seattle, even though Seattle's code says it is? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it a Seattle case?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll give you the citation. It's 44 Washington App, Division 2, 1986. So I would simply...
1986 is the page number?
No, that's the year of the case.
Okay, what's 44 Washington App, what's the page number?
754.
Got it. All right, thank you.
So I apologize if I should have understood that this was going to be a hearing on the legal issue of jurisdiction. I had thought we were simply doing scheduling today.
And we will be doing that, but I don't have jurisdiction to hear the appeal. I'll take a look at your case, and I'll issue something in writing with respect to jurisdiction. I don't need any further briefing on it unless you have some other case you want to tell me about now.
I don't have anything at the top of my head.
Okay.
We would ask, Madam Examiner, that when you do issue your ruling on the jurisdiction question, if you could put some material in there relating to SMC 2344-010B1. This is the provision that says special exception type 2 review is required for separate development of any lot with an area less than 3,200 square feet, which this one is.
And how that, let's see, where is it? And let's see, B... It's B2D and B3, right?
It's 010B, B3.
And how that relates to?
To this specific property, because this
to
is.
B1.
Right.
Just B, actually.
That's right.
Okay.
If I may, and it's our position, I just want to make sure that you take this into account, that the application of the historic lot exception to this set of facts is, makes it a special a type 2. It's not just applying dimensions to a lot in the code. There's a determination that the lot was established.
I'm aware of that, and there's an interplay between those two sections, and I understand that's not what your code interpretation is asking. Your code interpretation is asking about the historic lot exception, right?
Correct.
Okay.
But we were thinking that because we view the type 1 more as just basically taking lot dimensions, the fundamentals, not application of legal principles to the history of the lot. And here the department must find that there was a lot established and that is a legal determination and not just application of, say, dimensions and
what
just basically fits.
Just a minute. And you're putting it on the record right now. I understand that. You'll have that preserved.
Okay. And what makes it special with a lot under 3200 is that when it is such an unusually small lot, the municipal code has called for heightened review. Obviously, not every historic lot exception is a type 1 decision. That's not our contention. But we are saying that certain historic lot exceptions, when they're on unusually small properties like this one, those do get type 2 review, not just relating to the special exception criteria, but to the entire decision to approve something like that.
I understand that's your position.
Right, and none of those issues were raised in the appeal.
They actually were.
To the lot dimension, to the window placement and the...
No.
Yeah. Okay.
About all the, it was the whole appeal.
So to the extent you're going to be issuing an issue on whether or not the Seattle has standing, Seattle Growth, we would just reserve the right to serve a dispositive motion if that goes contrary to what you're saying today.
Or even on the larger question, if you, after looking at the case that was cited, have some question about whether...
I know. Then I would...
We would like the
I would ask for a briefing
brief.
On it, yeah.
Okay.
I would ask for a briefing on it.
Suffice it to say we agree with your legal, with the legal conclusion you enunciated at the beginning of this discussion.
Okay. So, let's see. Well, I was trying not to do it by motion because I know that requires a whole lot more paperwork and there's been concern expressed with respect to the cost of this for both parties on the other side. So, with respect to the schedule for the interpretation appeal, normally what that would be just simply oral argument and briefing. Do we want to set up a schedule for that today? It seems like a good idea since we know we'll get an interpretation in December. So
you're not anticipating a hearing where parties can introduce evidence with respect to the legal lot status, whichever way the interpretation goes?
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, I'm just telling you that many times in the case of an interpretation, we just have oral argument. But if there are situations where you think you need to have a time period set aside for factual testimony, that's fine.
I mean, we can always work together to see if we can agree on stipulated facts and evidence, but
I
certainly
agree.
Would want to reserve our right to
introduce
that at the hearing.
That's right. But this is mostly a record review case. I mean, we're just using stuff that's already in the public record at this point. I'm not aware of any, you know, serious factual questions that we'd need to be
aware
stuff.
I'm not sure the record's complete at this point. But
right. Okay.
Just as long as it's clear that we
all
reserve
right.
our right.
It's
to
open.
So.
Right.
We anticipate calling some witnesses.
Okay. So, like, by the 9th of December, we'll have it?
Yes.
All right.
And might I ask, Madam Examiner, the matter you're going to rule on that you described earlier, will that also involve whether the Open Space Coalition is a proper party to the appeal?
I'm looking at their appeal and what's in and what's not, but are you raising a question with respect to standing or?
Well, we would file a dispositive motion on the grounds that as they, A, have not challenged any of the three criteria for the under 3,200 square foot lot requirements, and B, have not requested a code interpretation, that they have not given the hearing examiner jurisdiction over their appeal, and that therefore they should be dismissed. And it seems to me we were going to file a motion along those lines, but if the examiner's determination is that this is not a type, the legal lot status is not at this point before her, is not a type 2 decision, then that determination would seem to resolve the appropriateness of the open space, not Ms. Perriott's appeal.
I understand.
But the open space coalition.
I'm sorry, it's Seattle Green Spaces Coalition.
My apologies. The Seattle Green Space Coalition. I don't know if it's a standing issue, but they have failed to give the examiner your jurisdiction.
If we want to go ahead and do this by motions, and Ms. Fleck, you're saying that you do, despite the cost, right? We can do it that way.
We prefer
We're short on time.
I don't know why there'd be any cost other than preparing the brief, Your Honor.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's your time.
It's certainly a cost to our client. I was just questioning that since in our minds the jurisdiction of the coalition.
I understand the case is gone. I agree with you. I've already made that decision.
Okay.
But if you want to do it by dispositive motion, you can. Otherwise, I simply will issue an order.
Please do, and then if you feel that it's appropriate to file a motion after that.
I would appreciate, Your Honor, simply because then we would have all the issues on clarified for appeal, and I think that would complete the record.
Okay. We're going to do this on very short timelines then. And it will depend on whether I can even get to it.
Madam Hearing Examiner, a lot of things just happened. You know, dismissing the type 2 today, so we didn't. If the department is going to get this out by the 9th, you know, with holidays, we might want to just have a little bit more time for a hearing on the interpretation. We're going to need to do a brief on it. And
I know we're talking right now more about the other issue about whether or not this is a type 2 or a type 1 and so on. How soon can you get your dispositive motion in?
Well, I think the hearing examiner has jurisdiction to dismiss it outright, but if you're requesting...
I'm not really requesting it, but if you want to do that, you can do it. Otherwise, I can just go ahead and issue an order. But I know that Ms. Fleck wants to brief it, and so I'm going to allow her to do that.
We would prefer to wait for the examiner's order, and if we think that there's some issue remaining open after that, we would then obviously
move for reconsideration.
Or if the examiner thinks there's an issue that would require briefing, we're happy to apply that. But at this point,
we would prefer to just have the examiner issue an order.
All right.
And we would prefer to also file a motion as well or briefing on the type 2 question, because it affects our client as well. The code interpretation fees are extremely high.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, I had anticipated that today was going to be a scheduling conference, and I was not anticipating that we would be thrown out today. And if that is the case, I'd like briefing on it, and I'd like to see what the reasons are, and I'd like an opportunity to respond to that.
Well,
I don't think it is fair for us to be thrown out of this case without any briefing except a letter from Mr. Jacobs without any supporting documentation or any legal authority at all.
Okay. I'm at this point giving you an opportunity to brief. The applicant is saying that they don't need to. They don't feel they need to. So I'm giving you an opportunity to brief that issue.
Thank you.
And we're trying to find a date for it. Can you do it by next week? Both of you?
We can do it, yes.
Because I'm seeing a little bit of time the week of the 14th that I could actually get to it. So if you could do it, if you could have it in by the 10th.
Yes, that's signed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
And then will we have an opportunity
to respond?
Respond.
All right.
I mean,
just in case you can't trust me. All right. just in case they have something that convinces me. I understand, Mr. Jacobs.
I mean, essentially, we have two briefs in front of you already arguing the position.
I know. So if you have an opportunity to respond, it's going to need to be like by the 14th. It's a Monday.
Yeah. You have nothing else to do with a newborn.
No. May I just? Well, the issue we're talking about is Ms. Fleck's ability to pursue this as a type 2 without having filed an interpretation. Is that the, I just want to make sure.
That's my understanding.
That's what we're talking. We're not talking about the dismissal of our case as a type 2.
No. Well, I think those two are pretty related, aren't they?
That's why I'd like to brief.
I just want to make sure, because I think that, I just want to make sure we're not talking about I want to know which one we're talking about.
We're talking about both, because I think they're interrelated. We're talking about the type 2 versus the type 1.
Right. So you're giving us an opportunity to brief what
all over again, what you just already briefed. but that's okay.
But I thought that her standing, I'm sorry, excuse me.
It's not standing.
Her ability to, okay. So
it's the same issue.
The type 2 issue.
It's the same issue.
Thing.
What's in the appeal, and it's to my way of thinking.
Type 2? Right.
And that's all I see. And so that's, you need to brief whether or not you still have an appeal in light of the fact that I think that you probably don't, because I don't have jurisdiction over a type 2 issue.
Right.
I'm sorry, type 1 issue.
Not yet.
I could take a vacation. Okay.
So the department then would want to respond within the same time frame by the 14th if there's anything we need to say in response to the briefing.
So briefs from the appellants on the 10th mm-hmm. on these issues. And you can get copies of the recording if you feel like you need to be clear on it. And briefs from the applicant and the department on the 14th. And I hope to get to it sometime that week. And so I'm thinking we can go ahead and set up schedules for witness and exhibit lists in December. Let's see. Can we get witness and exhibit lists from the appellants the week of December 5th?
We can do that, Madam Examiner.
All right. And from the department and the applicant by the 19th?
When you say the week of December 5th?
That means the 9th.
Yeah.
Okay. I just assumed that.
The 9th and 19th.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. The only thing I would add is I think you correctly stated that you have jurisdiction to dismiss the Type 2 appeal issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the interest of saving money for our client, if they want to submit briefing to preserve the record, that's fine. If the hearing examiner thinks additional briefing is needed from the applicant, meaning if you think that your decision might go the other way, we request it. But otherwise, I think you have authority to issue that decision. And if it's, at all possible to avoid an additional expense to our client, I think that would be preferable.
I'm not saying that you have to brief. I'm saying you have the opportunity.
Okay.
And the witness and exhibit list dates you just established are for the assumption under the department will issue an interpretation regarding
right.
the legal lot status. Someone will want that, will disagree with that. And the appellant will, these will be the dates that are applicable to that.
Yes. If you're going to present factual testimony in a code enforcement case, those are the dates.
Okay.
So if I'm understanding, right now we're saying the interpretation is to be out by December 9th, and also the appellant's witness and exhibit list will be out December 9th.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I just want to make sure.
Okay.
Let me clarify. If we're going to get the interpretation on the 9th, it would be nice to have a Is that, that's what you said, the 9th, right? Yeah. It would be nice to have a few days after that to come up with our list. So I'm concerned about everything happening on the same day. I would think that, I mean, I'm trying
to stay within the time frame that we've got.
Sure, but I'm just thinking, it would be, there. I don't know what the interpretation will say, and we might want a little bit more time after that interpretation to put together a witness and exhibit list, depending on what the rationale
is
and the interpretation.
All right, that's fine. Let's go ahead and just make it the 16th for the appellants.
Okay.
And the... Who's working over Christmas?
All of us now.
I'll be in the office through the 23rd out the
phone. Or Hanukkah. So. You'll be in the office the week of what?
The week through the 23rd.
And then you're gone till the...
Then I'll be gone the following week.
All right, so the 23rd. Yeah. Can you get your... And the department, does that work out?
Yes.
Grace, Mr. McKim? All right. 23rd. And that still gives us time to actually have some time to look at all of those things and have a hearing on the 12th. Okay.
In terms of hearing briefs?
Afterwards. If we are down to just a code interpretation and you want to brief it in advance, you could, but I don't see where you really have a lot of time.
Okay.
So my suggestion would be that we go to hearing, we are hearing whatever we end up hearing, and then decide what needs to be addressed in briefing afterward.
That's fine. If it turns out as a result of the decision you're going to issue regarding the Type 1, Type 2, that the parties, who's ever still a party, can agree, as an example, on maybe an agreed list of exhibits and in a briefing schedule.
That'd be great.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, anything that you can actually agree on is great. I would like to get the briefs. If you're going to do pre-hearing briefs, I would like to get the briefs no later than the 9th of January. I find with post-hearing briefing, you often have to do less, though, because I can tell you I'd like to know something about this issue, and that's all. Okay. Anything else we have to cover today?
Just to be clear, if we submit pre-hearing briefs, you would still leave the option open to submit briefs after the hearing, or are you saying one or the other?
I'm one or the other.
Okay.
Ms. Lecky, you have
a couple of things. If I could... pass this to you. Could you give one copy to Mr. Once for you, once for the other side. I would request, this is a picture of the lot that's at issue, Your Honor. I would request a site view. I know it's not done in every case, but it is done in some cases. And I think it's important in this case to get a sense of this block, because if you go and look at this lot and you compare it to the other homes on the street, many of the other homes similarly have large side yards like this. This side yard is what they want to develop on. So I would request a site view, Your Honor.
When did you expect that to happen?
Anytime you like.
Okay, it's not going to happen before I do the ruling on the motion, or the briefing, and then the order that I'm going to issue. But it will happen.
I think it should happen before the hearing so that it would help to understand the testimony.
Okay.
Is it possible to schedule with a day before the hearing? Or something, you know, just a few days before the hearing?
No, as far as the site visit go, we...
No, you do it after the hearing?
We often do it after the hearing. It just depends on when we can get out there.
Mm-hmm.
So... I will do one at some point.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Yes, Your Honor. When I was there today, it's not in this photo, I'm sorry, there was a large truck with gravel across the street, and I don't know whether it's for this lot, but we in the neighborhood are very concerned that the owner is going to start taking some steps to clear the lot, prepare the lot, take down the exceptional tree. So we would like an understanding, an agreement, a stay that nothing's going to happen until all these issues have been resolved.
I don't have stay authority, so Mr. Jacobs, do you have an answer?
Well, there aren't permits issued for the development of the lot, and my client's not going to do anything contrary to applicable law or codes. I don't know that a stay is necessary or appropriate.
We did have a situation in West Seattle, and I know it was not your client. I don't think it was your client who took down a tree, even though the Planning Commission had instructed them not to take down the tree. And that's why the neighbors would just like an assurance that that's not going to happen, Mr. Lowe, until if and when everything is decided.
You know, my client is going to comply with the law. He can't take down the tree without a permit. I don't really, just as a matter of policy, I don't really want to get into sort of special deals with neighbors outside the jurisdiction of the city. He doesn't have a permit which would allow him to cut down the tree. And I don't think that permit's going to be issued until this issue is resolved.
In any event, I don't have stay jurisdiction. I can't stop it, so. All right, thank you.